Welcome to Stories and Stanza, the podcast that delves into past, explores the world of prose and poetry, and brings you real life stories, creativity, motivation, and poetry. Join us every week as we take you on a journey through the human experience, sharing inspiring stories and conversations that will lift your spirit and leave you feeling motivated and inspired. Whether you're a lover of literature, a writer, or simply someone who enjoys a good story, Stories and Stanza is the podcast for you. So sit back, relax, and let us take you on a journey of discovery, reflection, and inspiration. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Stories and Stanza. Hi Natasha, thank you for joining us as a guest.
Hi there.
It's nice to have you here. Yep, share your story. So before we begin, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
For sure. So first and foremost, thank you for the opportunity for having me on your podcast. This is actually quite exciting for me. In terms of introduction, I can say I was born in Perth, Australia, but I don't remember that place at all because my family, we all moved to Canada when I was at the ripe old age of 2 years old, and we've never gone back to Perth. So that's definitely on my bucket list one day to go, because you're in Australia too, right?
Oh, yes, I'm in Melbourne, yes.
Melbourne, yeah. So that's also on my bucket list too as well. So hopefully there's a day where we can actually meet in person.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in Alberta, which is a province in Canada, and basically, while not born in Canada, was raised in Canada, and I kind of label myself as a hobbyist writer. I certainly am not a writer by profession, but I have always loved to write. My day job, I work in the public sector, so I am a government worker. Been doing so for over 20 years. And just happy to be here. I am married, happily married for about 15 years now. We've got two boys, with us. Our family has always been here, and we've just always been calling Canada home.
That's fantastic to, hear about all of that. So yeah. just briefly a little bit about the podcast. So, I'm very new to all this. So I created a place where I can share my own stories and bring in a little bit of poetry. And then I have met a few interesting creative people on Threads. And so I decided to invite them as well. So it's just not my podcast, it's theirs as well. And when they join and they share their stories, this helps the listeners find, motivation. Maybe someone has been like, maybe you are in a situation and then you can listen to someone else's story and that helps you from that. So I hope that our listeners will find it interesting. And you have told me about your journey of survival, and I think it's very essential for our listeners to know about it. So is that something we can start with?
Absolutely. So again, thank you for this opportunity. As like you mentioned, when we had chatted online or offline rather, I had mentioned that my recent publication is a memoir, and it documents and chronicles kind of my last 10 years of life and what life has been for me with the migraine condition that I had. And so it was, I had wanted to write my memoir as a way to raise awareness, not so much as migraines in general, but the migraine that I particularly have. And so, I've had migraines in my youth, like many others around the world. And initially, like when I started getting them and even into my young adulthood, just thought that they were headaches. just really bad head pain when I got them. And while in the moment, they were pretty excruciating, they were still tolerable. And, you know, I had always thought that they were just normal headaches or just, you know, some days or weeks, you know, may have, you know, maybe worse than others, but overall was still able to function through life. But it wasn't until in my late 20s, early 30s, when I had a series, I went through a series of medical issues, and it kind of all led into or bled into kind of that first night, when my husband found me in bed in the middle of the night, paralyzed. And the way that he described it, because I wouldn't have known, but when he said that he saw me, he thought I was done, that my whole life was just done. Because he had said that when he flicked on the lights in the middle of the night, saw me struggling in bed, I couldn't move on the one side of my body, I couldn't speak. He said my entire face was distorted to the point that he couldn't recognize me. And, you know, just kind of, long story short, through all of that, I realized just how serious migraines can be. And, you know, from that night onwards, you know, we slowly, you know, learned that, you know, there are over 10 types of migraines. And with the one that I have, it's called, I was later diagnosed officially to have something called a hemiplegic migraine. And apparently it was, you know, one of the rarest of the rare in terms of the types of migraines someone would have. And now that it's kind of time has passed, you know, we had all, you know, I joke sometimes that, you know, I should have went out and bought a lotto ticket at that time because it you know, I was told that, you know, out of a billion people in the world who have migraines, the statistic at that time and still is today, for the most part, that only 0.01% of this billion have what I have. So like I said, I should have went and bought a ticket. But so while I didn't win the lottery on that in terms of monies, I definitely won the lottery in terms of rare disorders. And it was, you know, from that moment in time when I got the official diagnoses, I would say is where, you know, in my books where we call like the repetitive nightmare had happened. Since that night, you know, in 2013, I have fallen from staircases, like from the top to the very bottom. Because, you know, when the migraine sets in, it does so without warning. And so a lot of the times when you're walking, right, you lose balance. And there are certain times where I just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and it just, I just tumble down. So in addition to when the migraine sets, then I might sometimes get a concussion as well because you're tumbling down and hitting your head against things. Sometimes when the hemiplegia kind of set in when I was sleeping, my family has needed to kind of basically shake me back to life. And when they do, when I do come through, you know, there are times where I don't remember who I am and I don't remember the people around me. It takes me some time to kind of get grounded again and kind of, it's really hard to explain, but it's a moment, right, where you really don't know what's going on. You're in a blur and then it kind of comes slowly back to you. And
it's so amazing that you're writing about this. It's very, very important, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, no one attack is the same, right? But, you know, really, if I were to describe it, every single attack that comes, I'm needing to recover from it over and over again. And it's like, you know, I think what would maybe resonate most with folks is that it basically is me or anybody who has this, you know, likely needing to recover from a stroke time and time again. When it first started, I would have these attacks, I would say once every couple of weeks, and I would need to basically relearn everything over again. And now that I'm older and the hemiplegia is still with me, the good news is that the frequency of the attacks have gone down, but the recovery period has definitely gone exponentially up, upwards of 6 to 8 weeks for me to relearn how to walk, talk, feed myself, you know, all the basics. So it's been over a decade, and unfortunately, you know, doctors have told me I likely will have this condition forever. And it's been, as you can imagine, it's been taxing not only for myself, but also for my family and friends, close friends who have had to support me through this, because they also have to suffer through to, through it too. I mean, you know, while I have the condition, they're around me needing to support me and all of that. And, you know, with a young child, you know, it's when I first had this, our youngest was only three. And, you know, at the time he wasn't yet old enough to see me when I first got this, but through the years, we haven't been able, obviously, to shield him from everything. So he has seen me at my weakest too, as well. And it is hard. I think as a parent, as you can relate to, because you're a father too, right? Having your kids being able to see, you know, your parent go through this is not easy either. And so there's that. You know, unfortunately, what I have, it's kind of like a ticking time bomb for me. And, you know, to add to this challenge, you know, it is something that's without a cure, because it's a migraine, right? And while the symptoms themselves might be a little bit more serious than head pain, it is still classified as a migraine, and it doesn't have a cure. It can only be managed through medications. But whatever medications that are provided, they also come with side effects. It's so, you know, there's that piece to handle. So, you know, like as I mentioned, my recent writing of the memoir and the publication of my book really was, is in hopes that it is to help raise awareness because, you know, there's no cure. And I'm finding that even the medical professionals, and I've gone through numerous of them, it varies even in terms of the knowledge that they have of this condition. And so I really hope that the writing that, you know, that is currently in my memoir will be able to raise more awareness, raise more attention so that there's more research, more funding for migraine, and someday.
It's very important to put your voice out there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I admire that you are writing about your recovery, your journey, and I think that that's very important for everyone. So, and you know, in this podcast, I am trying to unpick a lot of definitions related to the writer, like for example, someone says I'm a novelist, or someone says I'm a poet, or I'm an author. So it works very differently for everyone. And I wanted to hear from you what it means to you.
Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned earlier, I don't think I've ever really, I mean, even now, I mean, technically, you know, I've published two books, including this recent one, but I've never really pegged myself or even branded myself as an author per se. You know, at best, you know, I would say that I'm a hobbyist writer because I really do enjoy the writing process. And, you know, and so when you ask me about, you know, what does being a writer mean to me, you know, I would, you know, say that for me, it's a place. It's a place of being. It is a vulnerable place. And I would say that it's a place, though, that is built only for me and only for you. Because I'm sure, Obrelig, as you write, right, you're kind of in your bubble, too, as well, in a safe place, I would imagine, as, you know, you're trying to get the words to come to you, right, and be put on paper. You know, and I feel that is something very special because it's something that nobody can take away from you, no matter where you are. Yeah. Right. Like, and I think you can relate to that too, right? Like
I very much can relate to that. I would, like, I'll just briefly share that a couple of years ago, I lost my father and it was like very suddenly. As in, I spoke to him a couple of days back, and in that weekend, he was just gone all of a sudden. And it's like we were never prepared for his passing. And that left such a shock in me, like kind of a vulnerability. And it stayed with me for months. And then gradually, I started to channel that into writing. I mean, I wrote before, but I was like not really focusing on anything because I was too busy with life and work and everything. But that event, that vulnerability, that brought me back to writing. And then I can very well relate to what you are saying. And thank you for sharing that. It's very important that we know from each other as to what writing means for us, right?
Absolutely. And isn't it amazing what words can do? You know, yes. Like you describe kind of that outlet or that, you know, even like therapy, I guess, in some ways, right?
Yes.
Where it's self-healing,
yes.
You know, where you heal yourself. And to me, that's what's so amazing of what words can do. Like it can enable action. It can heal you, you know, and on the flip side, it could also make you angry, right? Like it's, and all other emotions that can be invoked. And so, and I would also argue it invokes different things in different people. Like it really depends on who and where you are in life. You know, and so for me, it's, you know, and with my hemiplegia, with my hemiplegic migraine, you know, it often leaves me with like a loss of self, a loss of control. And I think, you know, while I've always liked writing, after I had this, you know, been diagnosed with this condition, I found that the writing kind of morphed too as well for me, where, you know, it's probably where it created a space for me where I actually felt I had the most control. And truly, when you're writing, that is where you can be God, right? Like you decide, it's your call as to where you want to take the writing to. If it's a fictional piece of story that you want to write, you decide what your characters will say and do and how they end up. Right. And, you know, if it's a memoir, you have the ability to, you know, place the words in spaces and places that invoke strong emotions from people. So, you know, and I think it's also probably one of the safest place where you can experiment to be someone you're not, and also a place, you know, where you can truly be yourself too. So I also find at the same moment, it's a very freeing experience too.
Yes, that is very, very true. So continuing with that,
yeah.
So when you began as a writer,
yeah.
Was it by yourself or were you motivated by someone you knew or something that happened? How did you start?
Yeah, so I mean, as I mentioned, I always liked to read, and I think, like to read too. And I would say, you know, before the writing, it really did come the reading, right? So I always was drawn to storybooks from as early as I remember. There was just something special about books. And I would think that that's probably similar to many other writers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're drawn to stories. And so it started with me with the love of stories. And then from there progressed to, you know, having a hand in writing my own story. And so I started writing, you know, I'd say, really young, like, you know, talking about elementary time. I you know, I'd say the very first being human who encouraged, you know, this interest was my mom. You know, she herself is a hobbyist writer. She, you know, in fact, my mom's in her mid 70s now. And in Canada, we have a local newspaper, you know, that she actually contributes to on a regular basis too as well. So, you know, she's active in the Asian community. And so she writes in Chinese, but she has an article that she contributes to herself as well. So I may have gotten that interest from her.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know? It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so my first book, I remember my so-called book, I was in grade one. And my mom made me, but she helped me, you know, craft the story. We made like a homemade book. And I remember the title, it was called The Little Lost Cat. You can probably guess what the story was about. but it was, I would say it was my, you know, my first children's book, right? Like it had pictures in it, right? And it had, you know, really short and simple prose. But, you know, it talked about this little lost cat. And so, you know, since then, through my schooling years and whatnot, I've had people comment, you know, on how well I wrote. But I never really thought about it. Like, I honestly didn't even think about publishing or any of that. But I do remember, you know, probably in my early teen years, you know, my local journal, the local newspaper, they have a section where you write a letter to the editor. And I wrote a letter one year to the editor. And every month at that time, I remember they would select you know, kind of the best written piece for that month to the editor, and they called it the Golden Pen Award. And I was fortunate enough to be selected and was told I was one of the youngest writers in that cadre to be chosen in that newspaper. And it was really nice. Like, you know, at that time, I was able to meet the editor of the newspaper, and she was also an inspiration to me, and tried to, you know, kind of guide me in terms of what makes for good writers. And so, you know, through kind of all of these influential folks and people through my life, was where I started to think, you know, that maybe I could, you know, do a little bit more, with my writing, even if it is just for a hobby, and get it out there a little bit in the world.
Yep, that's really a commendable job, definitely. I mean, and it comes with a certain satisfaction that you can probably not just describe. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I have something that I you know, just that I see in social media a lot, that that writers have like become very goal-oriented, very objective in their mind. They share that, I'm writing something this big, this is my number of words, this is my progress, this is my writer's block, etc., etc. And for me, I have never been that methodical. Like, if I want to write, I write. And if it, and if I feel that I have a writer's block, then I don't. So I wanted to, you know, hear from you that, do you ever like set those goals for yourself, or do you find like kind of follow any particular discipline, like, you know, say writing a little bit every day, or journaling, or, you know, the novel writing month, that sort of thing. Do you practice any of that discipline when it comes to your writing?
You know, I was asked like a very similar question the other day from someone too as well. He was an engineer, and you know, he my friend was just asking, like, how do you get words out? Because, like, is it like that set discipline as you described, right? You know, or how do these words just come out, and how do you structure things? And I'm like you. I also don't really have much discipline when it comes. And it's really funny because, you know, I'm usually, you know, in my day job, I'm in HR, right? And so HR and human resources is all about process, right? And and rules and all of that. But when it comes to writing, I've never really had set anything really. I write whatever comes to mind. You know, you know, sometimes I might think about how to order things sequentially, you know, so that, you know, I guess there's some minimal structure, if you will. But overall, I don't sit down and because I've been hearing people when I was in high school, for instance, and they're teaching you how to write a proper essay, you know, or a briefing of sorts, there is an outline template, right, that they get you to fill out or whatever. And I've never been fond of that type of a methodology. It drives me nuts in terms of being needing to outline and plan when it comes to like writing, right? Because that just takes the freedom for me out of the writing. And you know, and I've just always found it really difficult to do. For me, I like to write freely, right? Like, get everything out on paper. You know, and then go back, and then you can edit or rewrite things, right? You know, I, you know, in kind of searching or going through websites sometimes, and I see comments from indie authors or other writers, and I can, you know, it really relates to me too as well, where they say like the initial writing part is actually not the hard part. It's the editing and the rewriting afterwards that actually, you know, is where much of the brain power has to happen. Yeah.
I completely understand that. I mean, it's very similar to how I proceed with writing. Like, for example, I would want to write something bigger, but of course I cannot leave my day job and my responsibilities and all that.
That is also a challenge too.
And I've noticed that, you know, if once or twice I tried that, you know, if I have time off, then I just focus and write, but that doesn't happen. Like, when writing wants to happen, then it will, like, you cannot force or discipline You know, mm-hmm. that's my take. I mean, probably it works for some other people, but
yeah. I totally agree. Like, even when I was writing my memoir, when I first started, I was like, okay, you know, every week I will finish a chapter, right? Like, I have to finish a chapter. And sometimes I did and sometimes I didn't. And it really depended upon where, you know, how easy or, you know, where your energy level was at, your inspiration was at in terms of the flow of words. Because, you know, in my mind, if the words aren't flowing the way that they're supposed to, there really is no point, right? Like, you might as well just wait until something comes to you and then you go for it.
So in this podcast, there's another thing I'm trying to understand, because, you know, most of the people I'm talking to, they are as you say, hobbyist writers or indie authors and all that. So so it's the everyone has their own jobs. It's something they're doing on the side, and because they enjoy the process. It's nothing about the money yet. I'm not people who do it for the money, but people I've met so far, they are doing it as a hobby or as an outlet kind of thing. So the way they see their growth, like, for example, if I was a commercial writer, then I'll see something very differently, that, oh, I have to make money, I have to sell this many books, I have to reach this much audience. That's not what I would, like, as a creator, I would not look at the growth. I see that what I write, if there is that material, is that nice, that's how I see my growth. So I wanted to hear from you that, you know, what gives you that feeling of success, or how would you want to see yourself a few years and down the line?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's for me, you know, I'm very much along the same lines as you. I want to continue writing because I love to write, you know, and I want to continue doing it, to your point, what you just mentioned, not because I have to, or not because I feel pressured, right? You know, or have an obligation to do so. Because when when you run into that emotion, and you start feeling that kind of pressure, it's no longer enjoyable, right? And it becomes a job that is not enjoyable anymore. And, you know, a job versus a hobby, could be very different, right? And, you know, and so for me, success for me, you know, like you said, it's, you know, certainly the couple of books that I published, it was not about, you know, book sales, and it wasn't about, you know, becoming rich and famous, right? So I could quit my job and, you know, just live off my royalties. Be great if it were. That'd be definitely be a bonus. But you know, it's not because of that. Like, to your point, it is because of you know, the safe haven that writing gives for me, and it's something that I feel that I need to protect that for myself. And having the privilege and having the opportunity to share it with other people, even if it's one person, right? You know, like I said, you know, the memoir that I've recently published, even if it only reached one person, but that's one extra person in this world who now knows about a rare disorder. You know, that they never realized. It's a benefit. Like, you're gifting somebody with extra knowledge, that could be beneficial, right? And so, you know, with that, that's why I've my first book was a fictional story. The second publication was a memoir. Like, I want to keep trying to write different things too, and not just restrict myself, you know, to just one genre possibly, right? Even just to have fun, with it. And whether or not it goes out into the public ether or not, that's irrelevant. You know, I want to nurture this type of art form for myself, you know, in terms of, it's something that helps me feed my soul, and it brings me joy and peace. And so I want to protect that, you know, when it comes to the writing. And that to me is the ultimate success of for me as a writer.
That's really inspiring. Thank you, Natasha. We have touched upon a lot of your stories, your suffering and your healing, all of that. But when it comes to your like writing story, is there something unique that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, thinking about, like, in terms of unique experiences or, like, an interesting kind of tidbit or story. You know, so as I mentioned, before writing The Silent Paralyzer, which is my recent memoir, you know, I had also self-published another piece of writing. It was called What Isaac Learned. And I actually wrote that book, wrote that piece of story when I was on mat leave, on maternity leave. So it was a fictional story. And I actually had started writing that story back in my university years. And you know, obviously I didn't finish it at the time, kind of filed it away in an archive box. And while I was on maternity leave one day, as many new moms are on mat leave, you know, there was a day where I just needed to do something else other than change diapers and, you know, watch really bad daytime dramas and all of that, right? And so I decided to, you know, clean out my house. And I bumped into kind of this old archive box that I completely forgot about, dug into this, and would you know it, I found a draft of What Isaac Learned. And at the time, of course, it didn't have a title. But I'm reading this draft, and I realized that I gave the name of the main character, of the main protagonist of that book, Isaac. And it's the same, it ended up being this, and I realized that it was the same name that my husband and I named our son. So my son's name is Isaac. And so a lot of the times, you know, after when I published it and had people know about it, many people assume that I wrote that book after having Isaac, and it was a dedication to him, where in fact, it really wasn't. I had no idea at the time, obviously, didn't even know, wasn't even planning, you know, of having a child even back then of my own. And so I just found it like really coincidental or whatnot. But, you know, in that moment, I felt that it was like a sign, you know, that I needed to finish this story, right? And I did. But you know, that's, I just thought that was, you know, what are the chances, right? That, you know, and it was like a span of over 10 years almost where, you know, I put the writing aside and, you know, and so I think to me, that was a lesson, like, you know, for any writer, whether it's struggling or successful or whatever, I don't believe that, you know, any writing ever goes to waste. You know, it's a process. And sometimes it might take 10 plus years for you to kind of rediscover it and refine it, right? And maybe you need 10 years to get that life experience so that, you know, the writing that you inject into your new product or your new piece is going to be that much more fruitful.
Definitely. No, this is really, really interesting. Okay. So I'll give you a small reference. This was in a movie where the actor says, "My father is a poet and he writes beautiful poetry, but he's angry with the world, so he never shares it with anyone." Okay. It's something that I saw a long time ago, but it attached me, and I've never forgotten that scene. But back to reality today, like an author has to do a lot of things. Like they have to be on social media, they have to share their work, they have to like market their work, they have to tell people what they're writing. Many people find that very challenging, and it takes the soul out of your joy of writing. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. How do you feel about it? Like, do you do it or you don't do it at all? Or if you have to do it, then how do you feel? Cope up with it?
I totally agree. You know, the self-promotion piece, you know, I'm in HR and I hate interviews, right? Like I hate going to them for myself, because a lot of the times that's what it is. It's self-promoting your skill sets. And, you know, as authors, it's no different. And to your point, especially this age, where technology is abundant and it's everywhere and everything has to be just in the moment, just in time, immediate. You know, I agree. It is not, you know, especially if you are an introvert like I am, it is very difficult. At least I've been finding it. It's certainly challenging. And I laugh when you say, you know, it sucks your soul out. That's different, but I definitely can relate to that. It does. You know, and like I said, like, you know, while I like to write promotion, you know, of whether it's your writing or of yourself, you know, and promoting what you've written is something entirely different. And, you know, and it's difficult to do, at least for me. But I also say, though, that, you know, now that I've gone through a couple of experiences with book publishing, you know, it is a necessary thing to do, though, if you want people to know about the work that you've done. Right. Mm. So, I mean, no one can ever force you to. Mm. Right. But, you know, it really depends on, you know, what your goal is. Right. If you're writing, right, a piece of something and it's meant for, you know, your own kind of self-healing, a process that you personally want to have all to yourself, you know, then you don't need to do the promotion. You don't need, right? Because it's for you. But, you know, in my case, for instance, with the memoir, I wanted to raise awareness, right? Like that was my purpose, to raise awareness of the disorder, to prompt people to do more, more things that I could do on my own, right? And, you know, so when I was, you know, working, you know, with the publisher that I'm working with now, right? They help me, are helping me kind of get out there with social media, right? Book launches, etc. Yeah. Yeah. But I do have to say, it is cringy. Like, it is pushing you to the limits of your comfort zone. And I don't know how you feel over like when you're doing this as well, which is why I feel like podcasts that you're hosting now, even that's admirable, because I could never see myself hosting something like what you're doing, which I feel is amazing. You know, so I do commend you, you know, for doing
it has started with something really funny, as in I was not sure how my podcast would sound. So, but before I started doing this, I used to kind of just record my poem, just the voice, and I used to publish that. And some of my friends, and usually I do it like later in the night, and some of my friends were, and you see the time difference in Australia as well. So a lot of people say that, you know, we listened to your poetry when we were traveling. And like whether we were in the train or somewhere, and it's really nice, and we think that you should do it more often. And then I realized whatever I'm doing, it's not staying in one place, it's just getting lost. And I have already lost a fair bit of poetry that I did. So I thought that maybe, you know, I structured this a little bit and turned this into a podcast.
Well, it is definitely a commendable and admirable venture. So good on you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And it's like when I'm talking to other writers and I'm getting to know about their creative process and sharing mine, it's like we are creating a sort of wide virtual family, right?
Oh, so for sure.
It's very interesting. I do not feel competitive about writing at all. It's like if you see that, you know, when two people compete, I'll give you a numerical sort of example. Okay, so let's say two people are competing with each other, and this one is at 2.5 and another say is at 2.25. And then if they compete, then, you know, cancel each other out and you're left with 0.25 of value. But if they join hands, they have 4.75, right? So
absolutely.
What we are doing, like we are all maybe part of a big jigsaw puzzle, and then we are doing our bit and we are fitting into it and we are creating a cultural footprint for time.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, so which is why it's really important for me to know about writers. I mean, I was writing very actively last 1 to 2 years in Medium, but when I realized that people are getting too competitive, because there's a little bit of money involved, so they behave madly, and I, you know, took a step back and then reorganized my writing and all that. But I'll never be competitive. I think that it's more collaborative than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so we're coming towards the end of our session. I just have one or two more questions. One is around mental health, and it's one of the burning topics in today's world. I mean, everyone is going through their set of challenges and all. And I get two perspectives about mental health when it comes to writing. Some people say that they are writing only because they are suffering, some people say that everyone is suffering, but it is an outlet, it is how we channel our energy, or we channel our spirit into something meaningful. So I'm asking you this because my daughter often writes things on her own, and she rarely shows it to me. And then she says that I'm writing because of joy. And I never hear people saying, I'm writing from my happiness. And a lot of people say, I write from my struggle. And I personally feel that it is important that you realize who you are and how you... your words kind of define you. So I wanted to hear from you on that. You have gone through a lot of health issues, and you have miraculously healed and all that. So how do you see and you being in your profession, you are an HR, so you deal with people all the time. So how do you see mental health and writing?
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, first and foremost, I feel that your daughter needs to talk to my son, because my son writes out of necessity when his teachers tell him that he has to write an essay, and he reluctantly does it. And sometimes he doesn't do it very well. So, but that will be an offline conversation that I might have to reach out to you. But all of that aside, when it comes to mental health, you're bang on. It is, a trending topic. On the one hand, I am certainly grateful and happy that it is becoming more of the norm in terms of not a taboo topic anymore. Yeah. People are more free now to speak about mental health challenges. And, when it comes to even myself and the mental health challenges that, I've had to, needless to say, whenever an attack comes or came in the past, or even now, because I still once in a while get them now too, in terms of the hemiplegia, it does take a toll on your mental health. And that grit and the will that is needed to kind of pull yourself back up again. There's a whole bunch of different facets and things that need to kind of come together to give you that strength in the moment. To help you push you forward once more to get back up, right? For me, in terms of channeling, the despair or the frustration and the sadness that comes through mental health challenges, for me, it is writing that gives me that outlet to help me do so. Now, I'm not saying that, for me, that writing is the miracle drug or the miracle approach. It certainly isn't. But it is one of the things that I have in my toolkit, if you will, one of the most important things in my toolkit, that I have constantly and continue to use as one of the things to, get back my strength, if you will, from a mental health perspective. And if nothing else, it is the place where I can find peace, and I can find, or I can get away from the anxiety, and I could, be free to be at peace. I don't need to worry about in the moment, if another paralysis attack is going to come, am I going to not remember who I am tomorrow? or do I have to relearn how to walk and talk and feed myself again tomorrow? I don't have to worry any of that, because in the moment I just have, you know, my laptop and my words and me typing, and it's that quietness that is very valuable, I think, and it's a gift. And I think, you know, for listeners, you know, to your show, like, it is a gift that you give yourself. And like I said, nobody can take that away from you. Right. And, you know, so long as you have the ability to come up with words, it's within you. And to me, that's what writing gives to me. And no doubt it also helps with my mental health for sure.
Thank you. Thank you for that perspective. We are close to the end of the session, and I created this this name for this podcast, Stories and Stanza, because one part of it was like sharing the personal story, and another part was stanza was more about poetry. But it's more about, like, when I'm having a guest, I request them to read something they have written. And would you like to do that?
Sure. Absolutely. So this is, I've chosen to, read a little bit of an excerpt of the foreword, piece of my memoir. Sets up, I think, kind of the mentality that, I was in when I first chose to, you know, put words on paper. And so I just wanted to share it with the audience. Just kind of the last bits here. So I'll kind of start now. So for a long time, I had thought that because of my lack of presence, this story would not be worthy. And for many, it still might not be. But perhaps for the few in this world who, like me, have also been chosen to carry this burden, they will, if nothing else, find comfort knowing they are not alone. Though most names and characters of my recount have been changed, the story I share is real. The voice that tells the story is real. It has been real not only for me, but for my closest family and friends who have watched helplessly on the sidelines. It certainly has been real for many others who have been struggling to find their sense of self in the face of this cruel fate. So call this whatever you deem fit, a memoir, personal essay, a work of nonfiction, or a blend of everything in between. There will be things unresolved and events likely remembered wrong, but in the end, labels and categories aside, this is a recount of just one person's story. It is the retelling of my story, a long-awaited attempt to pick up the scattered pieces of whatever that has been left in a tattered memory bank in hopes that there is still a future for me to live in.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Is that from your book?
It is. It is. Yeah. So like I said, this is kind of a forward note that I provided to my readers, you know, just as to set up, you know, kind of the rest of the memoir prior to me kind of going into how my story kind of all starts about 10 years ago. So, yeah.
Would you be okay if we put this in the episode description?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I think it would really kind of give people an idea of what this episode is about. And it's really amazing.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Appreciate it for sure.
Yeah. And last question from my side. So would you give any advice to aspiring writers, or maybe to yourself about your writer's journey?
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, maybe it's not so much advice, because I'm hardly a seasoned writer. what I tell myself all the time is keep writing. Keep on writing. It's like your DNA. It's like my DNA, right? Like, you know, if writing is what makes you uniquely you, right? So like DNA, like your DNA, there isn't anyone else who writes the way that you do. There's not anyone else that writes the way that I do. And, you know, and that's what makes it all special, right? And, you know, to your point earlier that you talked about the collaboration piece, that is what makes this art so unique too. Because everything is so, everyone offers something different, and you you thread them all together, and it makes for one beautiful thing for people to experience. And I would say, you know, and this is something that I keep on reminding myself too, like, do it for the right reasons, right? You know, don't do it because, you know, you're feeling pressured or you have to do it, right? You know, with writing, it really, to make it meaningful and to make it worthy of your time, right? It should be something that brings you joy and peace, that nurtures your soul, that feeds your soul. So it doesn't suck it right out of you, right? You know, and you know, with that mentality, I think, you know, that's why that even if you get rejected by agents and publishers, right, countless times, it doesn't matter because you're doing it for yourself and that's home, right? And so if that's home for you, it doesn't matter how many rejections you get because you enjoy the process. You know, we hear a lot, or at least I do, right? A lot about, you know, it's not your destination. It's the journey that gets you to the destination, right? And I think, you know, part of it, that is what writing is. It is more the journey than the actual end of the day, the book that comes out of it. So I would encourage anyone, who aspire to write or are writers too, I would share that sentiment with them and just keep on writing. I think the world needs more writers, and really appreciate the strength that writers have.
Thank you for that, Natasha. It was really lovely talking to you. And I hope that the listeners will be inspired by your journey, by your writing, by your thought process. And yeah, maybe we should, you know, do another discussion sometime if we're both up to it.
Absolutely. I would love to. But, you know, in the meantime, Oprah, like, thank you for the opportunity. It has been a delight. And thank you for, you know, the chance to be able to share my story. You know, as you talked about, self-promotion is not easy. It's very difficult to do. And so I do thank you for making the process a lot easier, you know, too, as well. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to stop recording now. Have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Oprah. Bye now.